Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut, and pouches that gives you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz that you're used to without tobacco. Fully Loaded Chew comes in 9 flavors and is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine. To give us a try, head on over to fullyloadedchew.com for a $1 can of chew with free shipping when you enter the code OUTDOOR1, OUTDOOR, and the number 1. For more information on our product line, visit fullyloadedchew.com.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is a guy named David Falk. And David, have you heard the saying, like, a jack of all trades, a master of none? Well, this guy is like a jack of all trades and a master of turkey hunting. He is a freak when it comes to turkey hunting. He got the itch for it in college. So basically, he really jumped into turkey hunting around the same time that I jumped into turkey hunting in life. And the only difference is he took it and ran with it. Me, I kind of like tiptoed. Still, I'm about ankle deep in the water right now, but he is like head first all the way in. And he chases birds all across really North America. I mean, Mexico, the whole U.S. I think his goal is to kill one in every single state. And he's trying to pursue, well, I think he got the Grand Slam. He's pursuing the Super Slam, the Royal Slam, all of it. And I've got some updates for that at the end of the show. So stick around and listen to the outro, because we're going to talk a lot about his pursuits, what he's hoping to accomplish. And then I will update you on how that went, because unfortunately, a decent amount of time has transpired between the time that we actually recorded this to the time that it's getting aired. And so luckily I can update you, let you know how it went for him, and we're going to jump right in.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, so I am constantly getting asked about the gear that I'm using, and the great news is that I've got it all listed out on Go Wild. Now, if you listen carefully, I'm going to tell you how you can get a $10 gift card to use toward picking up some new gear. Go Wild is a free social community where your photos aren't censored, they're actually encouraged. So much so that Go Wild will give you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting friends. Now, as you earn those points, you can unlock awesome rewards like gift cards and free swag, knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. Also, check this out. If you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. So go visit downloadgowild.com to get started. All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is David Falk. Now, David is from Arkansas. He is a diehard turkey and waterfowl hunter, as I feel like most people are if they're in Arkansas. But David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you start out by sharing with the listeners a little bit about yourself, what it was like maybe growing up in Arkansas, kind of your history being raised around that type of hunting environment.
Yeah, sure. So I guess, you know, like we kind of chatted a little bit before we started, but grew up in Arkansas. I've been here my whole life. Had a little brief little stint outside of the state. I lived in Colorado for a little bit after college for my first real job. But yeah, man, I grew up here, you know, growing up in Arkansas, like you kind of mentioned, everyone here is a duck hunter. The duck hunting culture is just super strong. I mean, we were kind of joking about, you're pretty much born with a duck call in your mouth when you get here. Like, everyone has a duck call. Everyone calls. Everyone's had a duck boat. Everyone's had a duck dog. My dad actually kind of introduced me to hunting. He's a huge duck hunter. And really, growing up, that's kind of all we did. We got a little land down towards Stuttgart, you know, the duck capital of the world, and spent all our time duck hunting down there. So that's where, like, my first true, I guess, hunting passions started and really got me down that whole path. Grew up deer hunting some, but I've just never got that fired up about it. It's something I kind of do in passing, until duck season starts. And I guess, so, growing up in Arkansas, there's not a lot of turkeys. There still isn't. There was at one time, but populations have been kind of just declining for 20 something years. So I really didn't get into turkey hunting until I think I was 13 or 14, something like that. It was like my freshman year of high school. And I've got a funny story about that too. I can tell you later, but that was the first time I ever went turkey hunting, and me and my dad knew nothing about it, but that really, I actually went, and my second hunt, I was able to get a turkey, and that like lit a whole nother fire. And since then I've just been obsessed with it. Went off to college at Mississippi State and hunted public land down there for 4 years on a really tough national wildlife refuge. And that's where I really like kind of grinded my teeth and like learned how to truly kill turkeys. And since then I've kind of gone nuts. And, now I pretty much spend every weekend possible from March 15th to like May 31st chasing turkeys. It's almost replaced duck hunting at this point. I mean, I love both. Thank goodness they're at two different times of the year. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's the problem, is when seasons start to overlap, you really have to figure out what your priorities are at that point.
Oh, definitely. Because, you know, I used to fish a lot of bass tournaments. I mean, I was obsessed with bass fishing. Like, I remember growing up, I was like, I'm going to be a professional bass angler. You know, I wanted to be Kevin Van Dam, which I think a lot of young boys probably do. But I used to fish some tournaments in high school. I fished some in college, fished like a national championship. But once I started getting crazy about turkeys, I can't even tell you the last time I picked up a bass rod. Like, I don't even think about it anymore. And that was something I really enjoyed. But turkey hunting has just completely made that leave my mind.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've always thought that turkey hunters were kind of funny, because I never grew up with turkey hunting. Like, we saw turkeys everywhere, but we just never hunted them. We were whitetail hunters, and that was about it. And then I got into waterfowl hunting. That kind of took over for a long time. Absolutely loved that. Bought a bow, started shooting that all the time. But it wasn't until after college that I started turkey hunting. And everyone was just so diehard about it. And I think I had a boss one time that just wouldn't stop talking about it. Like, there's nothing that even compares. And I think that he almost ruined my view of it, because I get kind of turned off to things when people talk them up so much. Like, dude, there's nothing better on the planet. Like, this is the greatest. I don't do anything else anymore because this is so good and it can't even compare. And then I go turkey hunting and I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
you made it sound like I would never want to do anything else. And it's fun, but it's not the end all. That kind of ruined it for me, I feel like. But now I find myself every week looking more and more forward to it. This year, I've put more time in the woods chasing after turkeys than I ever have. And I've seen more. I've had more cool encounters. Like, lots of good stuff happened this year. And so I'm kind of building my passion for turkey hunting up now.
Oh, definitely. And I think a lot of it has to do with the individual and, like, you know, their own personal passion level and stuff like that. So, like, here, I mean, there's a lot more turkey hunters now than when I remember growing up. Maybe that's just because we weren't really doing it that much. But, like, I feel like most of the turkey hunters that I met, that was all they did. Like, if you were a duck hunter, I mean, everybody was a duck hunter. They talked about that, and they deer hunted too. And then you had the people that only deer hunted, but like turkey hunting, like, I never met that many people that did it. And I don't know if it was just as our like low population numbers here on turkeys. So like not that many people did it. But it seems like the few people that I talked to that were turkey hunters were like very secretive and like low key about it. Which is kind of different than it is now. So like, I just never had much experience with it until I went. And for me, I just got hooked because personally, I'm like super ADHD. Like, that's why I'm a terrible deer hunter. I just can't do it. Like, man, you put me in the deer stand and like, if I don't have deer directly in front of me, I'm like bored out of my mind. So for me, turkey hunting's great because like you get to move around, you get to call, you get to talk. Like, you know, if it gets boring, you can go somewhere else. So like, it constantly kind of keeps that like engagement that I need. And same with waterfowl hunting. I mean, I think that's why a lot of people like waterfowl hunting, is being able to move around and talk, and, you know, you're not just sitting there still and quiet. So for me, it was just a perfect fit, but, you know, for everyone, it may not be the case, but I am glad that you're starting to get some of these experiences where you're starting to see the attraction.
Oh yeah. I mean, it used to be like, I would sit in spots where I had seen turkeys come through during deer season. You know, I'm like, hey, they use this all the time, or I catch them on trail camera. And so I'm like, obviously they're using it later in the year. They're probably still using it this time of year. And so I'd go and sit in these spots and I'd have encounters, but like the first time I heard them spitting and drumming, like strutting up close, they came all the way up to like 3 yards from me.
Yeah.
But they were on the neighbor's property.
Yeah.
And so I'm like looking this turkey dead in the eye from inside of a blind, and he is just, he's so upset, just fully strutted. And I mean, he did that for 45 minutes. And the whole time I'm thinking like, dude, I could shoot this thing point blank if I stuck my gun out. And I don't know. I was like, man, that's cool, but it didn't happen. They didn't come in. I've been waiting. I have yet to have them come in and beat the crap out of my decoys. My buddy had it happen on the property I hunt yesterday.
Okay.
And that's something that I really want to see. But I've had them come in just fired up. And I think I say that I've never had them beat up my decoy. I think they did one time, but we actually got bored and went for a walk. And so we came back and these toms were booking it across the field towards my Jake decoy. And we actually got the turkey fan out, snuck up on them to 16 yards and waited for them to pop out in sight. And we couldn't see the decoy at that point. But anyways, we doubled up on them. So
oh, awesome.
I've never had it happen like right in front of me. But this year we hunted a couple different spots and we kept hearing them. And I was like, man, I wish we would have set up over there. Well, one of the first mornings we heard them gobbling in this different patch of timber on the property. And I was like, dude, do you think we have time to book it over there and get set up? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So we did. And that changed everything for me as far as turkey hunting. Like this year, I don't go and get set up until I know exactly where the birds are roosted. And before, I would just set up because like, oh, I thought it might be a good spot.
Yeah.
And so I think that's been a big change for the success that I've had this year and for my excitement. Cause now it's like you go out there and at dark and you're just kind of hanging out, standing in a field where you can get to different spots quickly and you just wait. And once you hear them fire off, then it's like, all right, time to go. Let's hurry, get over there, get set up before they can start to spot us. And that's been the fun part of it for me is figuring out.
Oh, definitely. Tell me, I mean, it kind of sounds like when you were first kind of getting started, you were kind of more like what I call deer hunting turkeys, which a lot of people do that, you know, necessarily don't. A lot of people do this when they're first starting out, of course, or if they don't know how to call and stuff like that. And sometimes that's the only way to kill a certain turkey. But for me, like going back to the deer hunting thing, like I can't even hardly deer hunt a turkey. Like if I've got a game camera out and the turkey's been strutting in the same spot every day and he won't gobble, like I almost just assume not mess with him because I just can't sit there and wait. But that's what's great about once you really start doing what you're talking about, where you can start calling them and, you know, going out and listening and waiting for the woods to wake up and hearing birds and, you know, pulling it up on your mapping software, like your Onyx or whatever else, and like figuring out where they are, where they're going, and like, you know, formulate a plan of attack and like try to get over there and try to call them in, try to trick them. I mean, that's what's exciting about it. That's the whole game of cat and mouse that everybody always talks about with turkey hunting. That to me makes it exciting, and it's that challenge. So it gets me fired up. I'm fired up right now just talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some wild encounters this year so far. Like I took a guy out. He's come out with me a couple times now, and one morning, I bet you we heard between 500 and 700 gobbles. And that's
amazing.
Where I'm hunting, I mean, we're seeing a dozen birds every day, like toms or jakes, legal birds to shoot at least. I've hardly seen any hens or heard any hens calling. And we had a dozen birds in this tiny little like 12-acre patch of woods right behind us. We sat with our backs to it because the day before I had seen them come out of there. Mm-hmm. And then we heard them all firing off. And we sat there and for 45 minutes, there were a dozen birds gobbling, and every time one would go, they would all go.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It just kept on going and going and going. And I'm like, dude, there's no way we're not going to kill a bird because two sides of the woods are bordered by the road.
Okay.
And we're sitting on the opposite side, so like catty corner from that. And I'm like, they're going to come out somewhere right here. And they never did. And I'm like, dang, you got to be kidding me. Another day we had...
Where'd they end up going? Did they gobble off into the distance across the road, or did they just go quiet?
They were just hanging out in the woods.
Oh, really?
We could hear them just like kind of moving away. And that was basically the entire first week of turkey season for us. We didn't see birds in the field at all. Like the spots that I'll drive around that I have access to, I'll drive around to them and just see what's out, see what's moving, how many there are. And it was about 5 days worth of hunting where I didn't see a single bird on a huntable property that I had while I was driving. And they just were in the woods the whole time. And now it's completely flipped. And I've had encounters with birds in the same field 4 hunts in a row. Or like we did 4 days at this one spot. We killed 2 birds off of it on a bird on 2 different days. And then my buddy had a shot at one on one of the other days. So 3 out of 4 days, we had a shot opportunity or actually had a successful hunt in this exact same spot. And so now, I mean, the birds are active. They're coming down. They're talking like crazy. And it's been a total game changer for me. And I get why people get hooked on it now. Like when you're sitting there and you hear them gobble and you're like, dude, they're 200 yards away. And you might not hear that one gobble again for a long time, but you hear the other one sounding off. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh crap. He's 60 yards from us. I can't see him yet, but he's right
that's
here.
That's exciting. I mean, that anxiety right there is what gets me. Like you're talking about where you hear a bird and they're gobbling. And you know, you try to get as close to him as you can and you call and he gobbles. And like you're saying, he's, you know, maybe 150, 200 yards away. And then he just kind of goes quiet and you're like, is he coming? Is he not coming? Because other birds have done this and left, but you know, maybe he could be coming. You don't know. And then like all of a sudden you hear that thundering gobble at like, you know, 100 yards and you're like, oh crap, I think he's coming. And like, then, you know, it's just that game of like staring at the woods or whatever else, like looking for any sign of movement. And you're like, I mean, your heart's beating, that anxiety on me. I'm just like, hey, I'm going crazy. And then all of a sudden, you know, you catch a glimpse at 80 yards and here he comes. I mean, that's just what gets me going. I'm ate up with it. I mean, it's so exciting.
I will say I've never had this happen to me aside from like playing sports. But that morning when we heard all those gobbles, we were sitting probably 5 yards apart from each other. And it was just the way the hide was set up right there. Like we had 2 really good spots to hide 3 or 4 yards into the woods where we could see everything out in front of us. We could see across by the pond, by the corn and the beans and like all the common spots that we see them. And they started firing off behind us. And I'm telling you, I couldn't get my breathing or my heart rate under control for 45 minutes. And we never even saw a bird. That was just because they were going nuts behind us. And I would start to think like, okay, I'm doing all right now. I'm good. The whole time I'm thinking a bird's going to step out and it's going to see my chest and my vest like opening and closing, you know?
Right.
And the whole time I'd be like, all right, just chill out. If it happens, it happens. If not, whatever. And I hadn't had a good encounter with a bird at this point this year. And then all of a sudden I would just imagine catching movement out of my eye, out of the corner of my eye, and seeing birds just booking it over to our decoys. And all of a sudden my breathing would get heavy. My heart would start racing again.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kept going on. And I'm like, holy cow. Like this is pretty fun. Like,
yeah, it's that like fear of the unknown. I mean, obviously there's nothing fearful, but you're just like, man, what if, or what if they do this way? Or what if they go that way? Or I don't know. There's just so many things that can happen that it just like, I don't know. It's like that mind racing, just, woo, I want to get it done. You know, it's just, oh man, it's nothing like any other hunting to me.
No, I'll say the anticipation side of it, because you know there's birds and you know pretty well where they are and how far away they are. And you know that long before you ever see them typically. Whereas with duck hunting, like typically you see them and it happens fairly quickly. With deer hunting, you might not see them or hear them until you should be already drawn back and like they're in your lap.
Exactly.
With turkey hunting, you're sitting there and they're oh yeah, they tease you for 45 minutes or an hour or 2 hours.
Yeah, or more. Yeah.
Never so come in.
And that's the thing, going back to like deer hunting. I mean, like to me, yeah, bow hunting more fun than rifle hunting, obviously, because you've got that close encounter and like the excitement levels are so much higher. But that's always been my problem for deer hunting, man, is it's just like, you know, you go somewhere and it's like, you say you have multiple shooter butts on camera, but like, you don't know if they're coming out the day that you're there, like the time that you're there and the distance from you. Like, I mean, it's all just kind of like happens or it doesn't. And so it's just kind of like a lot of sitting, waiting, bored. And then like, boom, when it finally comes out, yes, there's a lot of excitement and anticipation and anxiety and stuff like that. But the window's just so much smaller on deer than it is with turkeys, in my opinion.
Cause oh, for sure.
You know, you hear that gobble at 5:45 and it may be 2 o'clock before you kill one, but you know, they are right there. You just, you know, you don't know exactly where they are, but it's just, I don't know. It's just different.
Yeah. That's where my patience gets tried all the time. Like I give up on them in a hurry. If they shut up, I'm like, all right, I'm getting my turkey fan out, which is basically an umbrella with a turkey print on the front of it. And I'm like, I'm going to them. And I'd say every single day for the past week and a half, I've put a play on a bird behind that turkey fan. And it's fun, but I'll also say there was nothing like having those two toms come in the other day when I had a successful hunt. Like, I knew they were coming. I could hear them. And in between gobbles, they might only move 10 to 15 feet or 10 to 15 yards. But then all of a sudden, I heard that one gobble and I knew they were on my side of the road. And I was like, oh, dude, if they're on my side of the road, they're for sure coming. Like, they have nowhere else to go. And then all of a sudden, I saw heads popping up. And now it's a matter of like, crap, I need to get completely in position and ready, because once they get up here, I've heard about their eyesight. They get spooked really easily, whatever. And oh man, just the way the entire thing played out. Of course, I didn't bring my GoPro out that day. I didn't have any camera set up. I didn't have anybody with me, but like, we could have doubled up on birds with bows if I had a second person there.
Oh man. See, it's great. I mean, it's just, and then too, like talking about coming in and when you're figuring out they're coming, you know, some birds too, like go completely quiet where they're not gobbling anymore. You know, say they gobbled at 150 and you could tell that they cut you off and then you hear nothing and you're kind of like sitting there waiting. And then I don't know about you, but my hearing's not the best. Growing up duck hunting all the time with no earplugs. I mean, all my friends tell me I'm deaf. Well, for me, drumming is like really difficult to hear. So I know like when I hear it, that means that bird is freaking close. And so like, that's a whole nother level of anxiety to me too, is like, if you've got a silent bird that all of a sudden all you just hear is drumming. And like, for me, it's a little hard to pinpoint. I don't know in your experiences, but like, there's just nothing. And all of a sudden all you can hear is just, and you're like, oh gosh, where is that? That means he's close. Where's he at? Where's he at? And you know, if there's any type of terrain or brush, then like, it's really difficult for me to tell. And like, man, the heart, I can't control it. Breathing, all that. It's like a whole nother way of coming in that just freaks you out, if that made sense.
See, that's the interesting thing for me, is if I can hear him, but I can't see him, my heart starts going, my breathing gets heavy. As soon as I can see him, I'm good.
Oh yeah.
Like, I calmed. I have this weird calm about me until after I pull the trigger, and then right. It's like everything goes crazy. Like all my senses are going kind of loopy. I'm just so pumped. I'm drunk on the experience, you know.
Yep.
But like, when I see him, I don't have an issue. But it's when you can hear him and you don't know what's about to happen. That's where the anticipation, definitely, the anxiety of it is just too much to handle almost.
Oh yeah. Cause I had a crazy experience. I guess today's what, Thursday. So it was Monday. I was in Utah and I was hunting some land over there, and I had set up on some birds earlier that morning and they were like at 150 yards or so. And I just couldn't get them to come in cause they were following some hens across this little pasture. And then all of a sudden, and I tried to like use some brush to sneak up on them. I was just going to try to get as close as I could to them, maybe even get in front of them and get a shot. Well, all of a sudden they just like turned around and like took off running. And I was like, ah, oh, crap, they saw me. Like, I was like, I don't know how they saw me, but they started gobbling. And I had remembered earlier that morning, there was another group of gobblers that way. So I kind of was like, well, maybe they just tore off after those other birds to kind of get, you know, and getting a little bit of the fight. So I ended up kind of giving up some time, and I snuck up there closer and closer and closer. And I ended up going all the way to the property line. So I had permission on this one little property, and I was literally standing at the fence, and I was looking out into the neighbor's property, and there was 9 long beards out there all chasing each other around and just, you know, having a ball. And there was about 7 hens with them. And so I kind of just, like you were talking about, all the anxiety gone at that point, because like I can see them, and I'm like, man, they're just out there. Like, they're just doing their thing. So I watched them forever, and I ended up getting out a full strut decoy, and I put it right on the fence line, like dang near touching the fence. Cause I had a little bit of an opening, like kind of down the fence line, where I was hoping that they would maybe come down and like cross the fence on my side. And so I sat behind that decoy, and that's really where I made a mistake, is I sat behind it, like, oh, maybe like 4 foot behind the decoy. And I was in like a thicket of trees. And anyway, I was just watching those birds, and finally 3 of them peeled off and they saw my decoy, and one of them started coming, and it came all the way in to like 40 yards. And so I was pretty anxious leading up to that. And he came all the way, like I said, to about 40 yards, stopped drumming, gobbling, and then turned around and walked off. So like I completely calmed down and was like, man, it's over. They're not coming. Well, then all of a sudden, the bigger Tom in the group, the one that was doing most of the strutting, like, man, he just like head turned blood red. He was like, made his mind up right then and there. He was coming to kick my decoy's butt. And those 3 turkeys came all the way to the fence, were literally touching my decoy at like, I mean, I swear they were 5-6 feet from me and standing right there, but they wouldn't cross the fence. And it was wild, because I really wasn't like that jacked up about it, because like I just had all this anxiety, and then like it left and I thought it was over, and then they were like coming, and I was just kind of focused, and then all of a sudden it hit me, and I was like, I have 3 gobblers like 5 feet from me. And like I just started shaking so bad, and I couldn't shoot them because they were across the fence. And eventually the biggest bird saw me shaking, I swear. And he wasn't too spooked, but he like threw his head up and kind of just stared at me. And then they just all 3 walked off. But it was crazy, because it's the closest I've ever been to gobbling and like drumming turkeys. And they lived to tell the story about it. I mean, I wish I could have had a video camera. It was insane how close they were.
Gosh.
But it was wild. I mean, it's kind of like your story of being in the blind. But I was just sitting there leaning up against a tree with another little tree in front of me. And they were, I mean, I could almost touch them. It was crazy.
Dude, I see those videos where the turkeys are like at the end of the gun barrel. And I'm like, man, I want that one time where there's not a fence or brush in between me and them. Like I want to experience them up close and personal. I want to have them gobble like right in my face. The other day we had gone to this spot, and we drive around a bend at the river, and like you can look out and see this entire bean field, and there's a couple little coves of field and like fingers of trees that kind of poke out, and it creates kind of like a perfect little area for the turkeys to come and just chill for the morning. Well, every day lately they've been out there, and I can get within about 150 to 200 yards of them before I'm completely exposed. And so that's where that reaping decoy comes in. And I've now put 3 stalks on birds with that. And one of them, I got 70 yards from it. It just didn't, something wasn't right. It didn't run off. It just kind of slowly disappeared into the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The other day we did one, and I was 35 yards from this Tom, and he was just, I mean, he was strutting, his head was bright red, but he was 1 yard on the other side of the fence line.
Typical.
And, you know, like he ducked down at one point, and I thought he was crossing under this 4 strand, and I flipped the safety off. I mean, I'm like ready to pull the trigger.
Oh, yeah.
And he popped his head back up, and I'm like, I can't tell. I really can't tell if he just ducked under the fence or if he's still on the other side. And so I never did pull the trigger. And I'm glad I didn't, because he was, in fact, on the other side of the fence still.
It hurts, but it's the right thing to do.
You know? Oh, yeah. You always hate, like, not or missing an opportunity like that. But my whole thing is I will never do something if I have to change the details of the story to make it legal or ethical.
Right. Yeah, that's all. It's not as rewarding if you're having to forever live with that lie. Like, it's just it's not worth it. It's not worth it to me.
No.
So, and that's it. Going back to, like, it hurting when you don't pull the trigger. So those three birds in Utah that I had point blank, like, in the moment, I was like, I can't do it. I'm not doing it. You know, whatever. The birds ended up leaving. Like I said, I think they saw me shaking in my little boots. And they eased off, and a little bit later I was like, dang it, I should have shot him. Like, man, I could have just reached across the fence. And then I was like, no, I did the right thing. You know, I was going through all these different emotions of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just had turkeys that close and didn't shoot them. So that was, I think that was probably like 10:30 that morning. So I sat there watching those birds in that field the rest of the day, and finally it was about 1 o'clock. And I was pretty discouraged, and I was like, man, this just sucks. I can't believe I did that. I was like, I'm just going to go back to my car real quick and get a bottle of water, because it was hot and I was thirsty. And this sounds crazy, but as I was walking back to my car, I'm over here talking to myself in my head, and I'm like, I did the right thing. And then it's like, you screwed up. And it was like, no, you did the right thing. I'm like back and forth on it. And as I'm walking, I look at, there's like a little pond in front of me, and I look and I kind of notice something moving. So I just stop, and literally one of those long beards that I had just seen popped out in front of me at 20 something yards, like 20-25 yards, just stepped out right in front of me. And so and on my side of the property this time. So I boom shot it, and I was sitting there and I was like, man, that was the blessing that I needed. I was like, that worked out. See, I was like, I got to kill one the legal way, and not didn't have to cheat, you know.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there and I was like, it kind of reinforced in my head. I was like, that's why you always do what's right. So, absolutely. You know, I had to lie about that story forever. So it worked out in the end.
Man, that's awesome. You mentioned Utah a couple times now. I did a mountain lion hunt out there this past fall, and the amount of turkey sign I saw, like in the mud on the roads, just hundreds of turkey tracks. And I was like, this would be the coolest place to come back to and turkey hunt. And I had every intention of doing it this spring, but it just didn't work out. But I mean, you travel all over the place chasing after turkeys.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I grew up shooting some turkeys in Arkansas, and then I went to Mississippi State and killed one in Mississippi, missed plenty in Mississippi. I went through a little stint where I missed literally 12 turkeys in a row. Like,
holy cow. It was,
talked about anxiety. Like, so then I put a red dot on my gun, and it's fixed all that. Cause I was having a hard time concentrating like on their head and their neck. Like I was shooting over them just over and over and over. And then, you know, then you get in like a little head case where you're like, I can't hit anything. And then it just gets worse. But put a red dot on my gun, and that fixed it. But anyway, that was my first like out of state turkey. And I was kind of like, hey, this is kind of cool. So I graduated and took a job out in Colorado. And I was like, well, man, I'm out here. I want to shoot a turkey in Colorado. So I think that was either 15 or 2016. That year I kind of was like, man, I want to travel and like shoot some turkeys. So I killed one that year, I think in Colorado, Kansas, and Oklahoma, I think it was. And I kind of was like, man, I'd like to really do this like everywhere. So I started Googling on the internet, like about turkey hunting in other states. And that's when I read about the U.S. Super Slam. I'm sure you've heard of that now.
Yeah.
I think everybody and their mother's doing it nowadays. But that was the first time I'd ever heard about it. And I was, because I've always wanted to do like the Grand Slam and a Rural Slam, if you know all those. And that's what when I was younger, I wanted to do. And then when I heard about the Super Slam, I was like, man, that seems like the perfect combination, because you get to kill a bunch of turkeys, you get to extend your turkey season. And I also love to travel, and I love to go new places and, you know, see all types of different stuff that's like local to the state and meet new people. So it just kind of was a perfect little blend. So since then, I've been pretty much every spring trying to travel to new states and shoot turkeys. So I've been doing it for a little bit yet. I'm not like, it's not all I do, but it's been a lot of fun. I know that.
Yeah, that's awesome. How many states have you hunted for turkeys in or had successful hunts in now?
I've killed in 24 so far.
Holy cow.
You know, there's 49 that you can do. So every state has them in the lower 48 and then Hawaii. Alaska is the only state that doesn't have them. So I've done 24. So I'm like right at about halfway. And then I think I've hunted two other states that I haven't killed one in yet that I hunted and was unsuccessful. So I guess I've hunted in 26. I guess that'd be right. Yeah. Jeez. So, and then I've got a couple more trips planned at the end this year that I can hopefully do. But so far this year, I hunted in Louisiana, which is a tough state. I hunted 5 mornings down there and was on some birds, but just like couldn't get it done. They were public land turkeys and just super pressured. It was pretty tough. So I was unsuccessful there. Ended up shooting one in Arkansas. And then I just got back from a trip where we went to California, Oregon, and Utah, and got some turkeys in all three of those states. So it's fun, a lot of fun.
Man, that's awesome. I've killed turkeys in Missouri and Colorado, and that's it. And awesome. I could definitely see how traveling and doing it would be fun. My buddy's been going to Georgia the past couple of years. I've got friends in Mississippi. I grew up in Wisconsin, and there are so many turkeys in Wisconsin and a lot of them, but I always forget to apply because you have to apply. Like, there's an over-the-counter tag that's coming up that I could get, but like my cousin is a turkey hunting machine. Last year he got like 17 or 18 people on birds. And this is just like buddies that he's trying to get out. This year he's already got multiple people. Big Tom's, he got his daughter, her first bird this year. And so he's like, dude, you got to come up. Like, we will kill a giant if you come up here. And
oh,
so
you need to.
I know, I'm like, that's actually it's an coming awesome up state here to soon. Hunt too.
I mean, I killed a bird up there with my dad in 2017 and we went the last weekend of the year. So we could only get one tag. But there was gobblers everywhere and they got huge turkeys up there too, like body size and just in general. I mean, it's some gorgeous country, big turkeys. And I mean, you can go up there in May when it's hotter and crap down here and it's nice and great weather up there. So,
it's a special weather. There's a lot more bearable. Like I don't like hunting in the heat, and down here it can get hot and humid like really quick. I'm not a big fan of that. But other than that, like, turkey hunting is definitely growing on me. Do you have like a destination hunt or a specific place that is like absolute top of your list of where you want to go and kill a turkey?
Well, you know, as of right now, they're pretty much all 49 are my destination and my plans. But I think one that I'm probably most excited about is Hawaii. Cause I've always wanted to go to Hawaii in general. And then I just think shooting a turkey on an island with like lava rock and volcanoes, like that just sounds absolutely awesome. And then plus too, I don't know a whole lot about it personally. Maybe you know some about it too, but I was reading some different things about Hawaii's also got like a large population of like feral goats or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can like go out there and bow hunt them. And I was like, man, that just sounds like an epic trip to like spend a week in Hawaii and like shoot some turkeys, maybe shoot some goats with your bow, and then like also just explore Hawaii. Yeah, like, you know, go see Pearl Harbor, go to the beach, like all that stuff just sounds like an amazing trip to me. So that's probably one I'm most excited about.
All right, guys, I need to take a quick second to tell you about a product that I've been using for quite a while now. It's called Bull Elk Beard Oil. If you've spent any amount of time in the outdoors, whether it's on the mountain, in the marsh, or in the woods, you've felt the effects of the wind, the sun, and the cold on your face. What this product does, it helps you look better, feel more confident, and it helps your beard keep its moisture. Not to mention, it smells great, so now my wife can't complain as much after I come home from a long week of elk hunting. Now I need to tell you, I've gotten to know Brian, the founder, over the past couple months, and he is an awesome guy. Brian made sure that all of these oils are made out of clean products right here in the USA. He also loves to give back to the outdoor community, whether that's through fundraisers for public land acquisitions, or even helping donate money to cover the surgery cost of duck dogs. He's an amazing guy, and he makes an amazing product. So go check out bullelkbeardoil.com, and be sure to check out the subscription options so that you don't have to run out of your favorite facial hair product. Plus, you can use the code NOMADIC and get 20% off your order. See, I've been slowly looking into Hawaii and hunting opportunities because they've got pigs, goats, axis deer that you can hunt out there. And I'm like, one, that would be super awesome. I've never been to Hawaii. My wife wants to go so bad. She was there for like 20 hours one time. She got on a trip, and then the family that she went with had an issue in the family, so they had to fly out literally the next day after getting there. But she's like, I want to go back so bad. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of a win-win. Like, go to Hawaii. I can hunt. I really want to get into spear fishing. I think that'd be a ton of fun.
For sure.
And then if she could hang out on the beach, she wouldn't care how long I was out hunting.
Right.
What kind of turkeys? That's the one thing I haven't looked into in Hawaii is turkey hunting. What kind of turkeys do they have out there?
So they've got the Rio, you know, the Rio Grande turkey.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I was reading about it actually not long ago, and I may lie to you on the stat, but I think they were released in Hawaii in like 1960. They put like 400 Rios or something on the island. It's on the Big Island.
Dang.
And like, supposedly the population is just exploded. And part of going back to talking about like a full-on vacation in Hawaii, that's part of why I think I'm really excited about Hawaii is, so for my normal job, I do sales, and in 2020, I had a really good year. And you know, they have like a sales incentive trip that they call it, where they'll take the top sales reps and you win a free trip. So in 2020, I won it, and I had a week vacation in Hawaii, staying at like the Four Seasons. And like, the flight was free, the hotel was free, all the meals, all the drinks. Then we had like activities. So like, I had signed up for 2 days of like deep sea fishing, you know, catching like wahoo and all that fun stuff. Then I had like a snorkel trip that was all for free, all this stuff. And I was reading about it. First time I'd ever really like looked that much into Hawaii. And I was like, man, this is going to be an awesome trip. Definitely because it's free. And I was so excited about it. And then because of all the COVID stuff, they ended up canceling the trip. So sad because I was so pumped up for it. And then they just, you know, pulled the rug out from under us and were like, oh, never mind, no trip. So because of that, now I just like, I almost can't wait to go to Hawaii. Originally, I was like, I may save that for the final state. Like once I get up there and I'm at state 48 and like, this is the last one, I'm going to do Hawaii. But now I'm like so fired up about it. I'm like, man, I may go next year. I don't know. Or maybe the new year after that, but I want to get down there bad.
So did they reschedule your trip, or did it just completely get canceled?
So you had an option of, you could take a payout where they give you like a cash bonus that, quote unquote, you know, was equivalent, which it wasn't even close. Or you could, reschedule for the next trip, which was, I think it's this summer, and I forgot where it was. It was like Jamaica or some Caribbean place. I don't know. Not really my cup of tea.
Yeah.
So I took the money just as I was like, well, I'm going to do something different. And I ended up using some of that money to take like a trip out to Colorado last fall, just to kind of visit some of the places that I used to travel and stuff like that. And I bought a new rifle with the money as well.
Hey, that'll work.
I was like, hey, if I can't do what I want, I'm going to buy some stuff that I want.
Yeah. So in living in Colorado, did you get into big game hunting out there?
Man, so that's what I was so fired up about when I moved out there. And it's kind of, I regret it a little bit now. So I just graduated college and this was like my first big boy job. And like growing up, my parents always like instilled like a heavy work ethic in me and like, you know, really beat it into me about like, you got to work 24/7, blah, 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 blah. So like I moved out there and I like had all this pressure on me to perform. So like I spent a majority of my time working and not doing all the stuff that I love. And then plus when I was out there, my territory that I traveled was huge. I had like Western Colorado, Southwest Wyoming, and like a little bit of Utah. So my territory was just massive. So I was always in a hotel. So while I was out there, I only got to hunt turkey. And then I met a good friend out there who was a goose hunting guide and a dog trainer. So I had my dog with me at the time. So spent a lot of time training dogs and then hunting geese with him. And then it wasn't until I accepted a job in Arkansas and moved back that I actually went back out there and I shot an elk with a buddy. And then I also shot a pronghorn while I was out there.
Nice.
So I'm a little sad because I didn't get to do all the stuff that I wanted to do. But I was able to do a little bit, but that's a whole nother world of hunting that like, I just would love to really get into it, but I just don't have that many friends that do it. And I don't know a lot about it. I mean, bare minimum, really.
Yeah. The Western hunting is 100% right up my alley. Like I love the mountains. I love big animals. I love just seeing antelope and mule deer and elk and moose and bighorn and mountain goat. Like it's all this stuff that I saw on TV shows or like, you know, these exotic hunts that I never thought I'd be able to do. And so then once you actually do it and see it in person, it's a whole different level. And I can't now what I'm really excited about, like having the experiences I have turkey hunting, having the gobbles and they're coming closer. I can't imagine having that exact same feeling, but it being a 600-pound bull elk coming your way, just right, bugling its head off first thing in the morning. Like that to me is almost the pinnacle of hunting in the U.S. when you have that kind of animal and the interaction, because you don't get that with most animals here, no, unless they're birds or small game. You know, like you don't have that back and forth with deer a whole lot unless it's a real short time during the rut. And even then, it's not like you can hear them from 700 yards away.
But oh, exactly.
A bull elk, to hear them scream and get closer and closer and closer, especially with a bow in hand. Oh, dude, that is a whole different level.
Right. So, you know, I shot mine with a rifle and I shot it at like 220 yards or something like that. And it was, I can't remember which rifle season it was. It wasn't the first one that you had to draw, but it was an OTC tag. And so they weren't really bugling. I mean, I got to hear a little bit, but that's something that's like 100% on the bucket list. I've got to shoot a like rutting bull elk with my bow. Like I want that streaming bugle charging in. Like, I mean, that's gotta be the most exciting thing ever. I'm sure that would maybe even kill my whole turkey hunting dreams. I don't know. I mean, I'm fascinated with the whole Western big game in general, just going back, like we were talking about earlier with my ADHD, where I'm just like so distracted easily that like I get bored, you know, sitting in a deer stand like down south. But like out west where you're hiking and like covering terrain and like, you know, animals here, animals there, like I don't know. That just sounds so much more intriguing and exciting to me. I think the hardest part for me would be having to sit down and glass a mountainside. I did that one day when I was out west with my buddy and I was like, I can't do this. I was like, let's move. And he was like, man, you gotta be patient. And I can't do that. Like, that's what I like about antelope hunting so much. I don't know if you've ever done, you know, hunted for pronghorn or anything, but it's just so fun to me because it's wide open and like they're everywhere. And yeah, you get to spend a lot of time in the car, on foot, like moving around. And then like, you know, once again, kind of like formulating how you're going to like get in front of them or how you're going to get close to them. And it's also just cool to me, antelope hunting, where like you're watching this group of, you know, a bunch of does and like one buck and he's chasing the does and, you know, he's like full on rutting. And like to get to like watch that out in the open was really cool to me, because I was like, man, I bet this is the same thing that's happening with whitetail back home, but like you can't see any of it because it's all just a thicket. And so it kind of got me a little bit excited, because I was like, all right, this is the same thing happening. I just need to like keep that in mind when I'm deer hunting. Like at any minute, you know, something could be happening. But it's just so much easier to see, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you're out there and you can see giant mule deer, elk, antelope, all from one vantage point, like that to me is one of the coolest things, where you have such a wide variety of big game animals. Because, you know, east of the Mississippi, or even at most places in the Midwest, we don't have access to all that stuff. It's like deer, and that's about it.
Yep.
But out there, it's like you could potentially be hunting three different big game species, or four, actually, if you get a bear tag as well.
Right.
You could be hunting four different big game species in one unit all at the same time.
Yeah, that's just so awesome.
And I'm like, dude, imagine that. Like just walking around, and it's like, man, if I see a big mule deer, I'm going to shoot it. If I see an antelope, I'm going to shoot it. Yep. If I see a bear, I'm going to shoot it. And
exactly.
Opposite from you, I love glassing. That has turned into one of my favorite things. And in fact, I got a new Vortex spotting scope this year. I got some adapters for both my phone and my GoPro, so I can hook them to my spotter or my binos. And like capturing video of elk or mule deer or whatever at 1,000 yards is one of the coolest things to me. 'Cause like they have no idea you're there. You're just getting to experience wild animals being completely wild at a distance that they'll never have any idea that anything's watching them.
Yeah, it's awesome. That was one really cool experience when I was out there on that same trip that I shot that elk. While we were out there, I had a bear tag, but my bear tag like expired before I came out there. So all I had was my elk tag or whatever. Well, we were hunting this property, and like we're on one, you know, super steep mountain, and it goes way down to this, you know, cut valley, whatever you call it. And then like steep up the other side. So like from our side of the mountain to the other side was like, I mean, way over there. You couldn't even shoot. It was so far. And it was cool because where we were at, there were some other guys that were bear hunting. So, you know, they had their little hunter orange on. And so we were talking to them on the phone, and we started looking through like our spotting scopes, and we could see these guys, you know, hiking up the mountain. Well, then the guys I was with, who were much better at glassing than I was, they started looking across this mountain. And there was actually 9 bears over there, all in different spots.
Holy cow.
And like, you could see like, you know, bear here and like bear way up there, and then like bear down here. I mean, they were everywhere. And I was like, holy smokes, I can't believe there's so many, like, you know, I would have had no idea there was anything over there, and there's freaking 9 bears. And it was really cool because we'd have to watch those guys move up the mountain towards the bear. And we, you know, we could just see them getting all the way to the bear. And then all of a sudden the bear took off, and we called the guy, and we were like, did you get him? And they were like, we missed. But it was just so cool to watch, because we could see the whole thing on that mountain, from our side. And it was just really neat. I mean, it was an awesome experience.
Yeah, it is cool. We've done a similar thing, and it was much closer. I mean, like 700-ish yards, where we watched our buddy. And he was going back and forth, and you could tell he knew that the elk was there. But there was a big bull, and it was about 50 yards below him on the same hillside, but he couldn't see it because of the thick cover. And he could hear it. And we're sitting there watching through our binos, and he's just walking back and forth. And then he'd hear it somewhere else, and he'd move. And he kept trying to get set up. And he's like, dude, I knew it was in there. But in Colorado, we can't use like electronic communication to walk a person into an animal.
Right.
So like, I can't call him and be like, hey dude, he's 50 yards in front of you and a little bit to your left.
Yeah.
Or hurry and get to your right, you're going to cut him off. They, you know, for whatever reason, CPW has made that illegal. And so like, we're just sitting here watching, and he didn't even know at that point that we were watching him do this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, man, I wish I was over there. I wish I could help him out. I wish I could like somehow get his attention from this far away. and let him know, like, dude, you're on top of this bull. Just be patient and you're going to get a shot opportunity. And he never did. The bull ended up kind of skirting him going around this point, and then we watched it cross a meadow and he never did see it. But
right.
Just to know, like, that could be you out there. You're walking around and you might have no idea, but there could be a big bull bedded 70 yards from you, or a mule deer buck chasing a doe, like right over the ridge from you. But the country's so big that, you know, it's almost impossible to know unless you have that bird's eye view or the view from across the valley.
Oh, definitely. Because, I mean, that's where we were. We were Colorado. So same, like they called us and we're like, hey, we're heading up. And we're like, all right. And then that's when we started watching them. And like, it was just funny because, you know, we couldn't talk to them, but we were just like, man, there's bears all over them. And they had no idea. Like, they were just walking up the mountain. We just watched them. And then they ended up getting close to that one. And we saw the bear take off. And so that's when we called them. And they're like, we missed. And it was just like, well, yeah, you sure did. But man, they were all over the place, you know.
Oh,
couldn't help them out. But man, it would have worked if you could have.
Man, it's just fun. Like, going new places and the amount of area that you can cover, or I mean, the amount of area that you have to hunt out there in just one unit that might be a million acres that you can, like, you see an animal, you can go there because it's all public.
I know, it's amazing. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah, it really is. Like, you can just put miles and miles and miles on. And then the other thing that I love about it is learning a place and, like, using what you learned this year to go back and do it again the next year. And you find these little pockets where the animals, as soon as they hear a gunshot or as soon as they feel pressure from bow hunters, like, they're going to tuck in there and they're not coming out until the gunfire stops. And they'll be back there year after year after year. And it might not be every day that you see them there, but, like, you will catch them there during season at some point.
Yeah, kind of start to put a pattern together, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know, man. Maybe it's because I didn't grow up around it. You know, I got to see turkeys and ducks and deer and squirrels and all that in Wisconsin, but, like, not having those encounters or seeing 75 elk run 3 miles across a meadow and up into a different mountain range, like, I can't imagine that ever getting old.
I'd love to do it more, but it's just a little, it's tough to me. I mean, maybe I'm being too lazy on it, but the whole points and tags and applications, like, it just gets to be a lot to juggle to me. I need to be more organized about it. Cause, like, just like this year, prime example, I've been thinking about the Colorado application. It's like April 5th or whatever, April 6th every year. You probably know off the top of your head. And I was like, I gotta apply. And then, like, I'd be dang if it isn't the day after the application's due. And I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta get on there. And, like, crap, I forgot. And so, like, I'm just terrible about that. I'm just not organized enough to remember. So, like, here's another year goes by that I didn't get any preference points for Colorado. And then I guess I need to make it more of a priority, because I would love to do it, but I've honestly been always a little overwhelmed by it because I don't want to go by myself, you know?
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
maybe I just should, but I mean, you got to learn how to do it somehow. But I would love to get into it more. I know that.
Yeah. I mean, now, for a long time, the preference point deal was so overwhelming for every state. Like, it was a huge hassle to have to deal with it and figure out what code you had to put in. But now the nice thing is there's a lot of apps and, like, softwares that are coming out where it'll track all of your preference points for each state, for each species. And there's even on social media, I think on Instagram, I follow Hunt Reminder.
Okay.
It pops up, like, all the time. I'll see it in my feed where it's like, hey, Montana application deadline is coming soon. Or it'll be like 2 days left, or final hours to apply, or whatever. Like, it'll alert you that you got to get your application in soon. And if it weren't for that, dude, I'd miss every single one. And that's why I keep missing the Wisconsin turkey season. I keep forgetting about it.
Right.
Luckily, I haven't missed any of the applications yet here in Missouri. There's a couple like nature parks that they do draw hunts for whitetail with a bow. And I really want to get there because there are some giant deer in these areas, But then also elk and bear that just opened up to apply here in Missouri. I want to say it was 3 days ago. So I have to get on that. But yeah.
Yeah. I got to get better organized on that because spring's always such a busy time chasing turkeys that I just, the big game stuff, I really want it, but then like I'm totally distracted by turkey. So I just completely forget it.
Yeah.
But like I random question for you talking about areas in Missouri that you can apply for or whatever. Do y'all do any of like the urban deer hunts?
I've got friends that do it, and I've got one buddy in particular, and he swears by it. That's all he does. He doesn't hunt big properties anymore. He hunts either in town or right on the edge of town on tiny little wooded lots behind
subdivision
a
and stuff,
a car shop or something like that, you know? And he's like, it's amazing. And I can only imagine. I've seen him out on soccer fields at the YMCA here. And even yesterday I was driving and I saw a ton of turkeys, probably 15 turkeys. I bet you 8 of them were toms, all fanned out, and they were right in the middle of the city. And so I'm like, dude, it just makes sense that if you could get access to some of these places, it would be phenomenal to hunt. But that's where like the nature parks, like the nature center here, they do a management hunt, and that's in the city. And I'm telling you, I've seen some of the biggest bucks I've ever seen.
Okay. Well, that's why I was asking, because so we have several like cities that they do the urban deer hunts here. And, you know, you got to pass like a proficiency test on like your bow and stuff like that. Make sure that you're accurate. And I think they've got some other little, like, you got to go like a little course and stuff. But I've heard people shooting, you know, 20 something deer in a season, just like laying them down. And then I've seen some of the bucks that they've killed, and I'm like, holy smokes, I got to do that. I've never signed up for it, but I was thinking about trying it this year. Because I mean, it seems like the population and the size on a lot of those urban deer hunts, kind of like what you're talking about in those nature preserve areas, are just insane.
Oh yeah. I don't know if it still is. And I think I've said it before on the podcast, but Colorado City, Colorado Springs, like the actual city of Colorado Springs, has the highest mule deer density of anywhere in the world.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that.
And if you drive around, like you can see it. Like there are, you'll drive down the highway, and in between the highway and like the big stone walls that they have running along the highway, you could see a half a dozen giant, like I'm talking 180 plus inch mule deer bucks. Like
some freaking studs.
There's something about human interaction or like close proximity to humans that a lot of animals just thrive in. I think I heard also New York City has like the highest density of peregrine falcons of anywhere in the world.
Huh.
There's multiple families of coyotes living in Central Square that they document every year, and they like follow around. And so it's very interesting to see like the mingling of humans and wildlife.
Yeah, how they find that little areas. Find that little niche.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it just makes sense. Like where there's people, there's going to be food. And so coyotes especially seem like they would thrive. But then the deer, once they get used to people, I'll walk around some of these trails and I might have deer literally 5 feet from me, and they just couldn't care less that I'm there. Like, don't pick their head up. Don't look at me unless I do some kind of weird movement that throws them off. But like, if you're just walking, they're just going to keep feeding and they don't have any care in the world. And so part of me is like, do I really want to go and shoot that deer that is so used to humans?
You're right.
But what I've done instead is I've taken those principles of the more encounters they have with people that aren't dangerous or don't end in them just like taking off in fear, the more comfortable they're going to get. And so I try to spend as much time out on my hunting property as possible without doing scent, without like dressing like a hunter, without carrying a weapon. If I could be out on that property every single day and have encounters with deer, it wouldn't be long before I'd see deer at 15 yards as I'm walking to or from my tree stand that didn't get scared off.
Yeah, I definitely think they get conditioned and stuff like that. Cause I know with different properties I've hunted for turkeys or deer or whatever, like especially if it's like a cattle ranch or something like that. And like, you know, they constantly drive like their Polaris Ranger around the farm. Like the turkeys get to a point where like you can drive the Ranger dang near up to them. And yep. like, they don't even care. Cause they, I mean, they're like, oh, I see this Ranger three times a day, every day. So I definitely yep. think they kind of clue in on that stuff and kind of, cause I mean, that's what, I mean, wildlife, that's their job is like their key is survival and they're going to do everything they can to learn how to survive. And so if they learn that that's not a threat, I think that just kind of goes to the back of their mind that like, you know, oh, that's fine. You know, they're going to watch out for stuff that's actually dangerous. So I definitely think they get conditioned to stuff like that.
Oh yeah. I tell my buddies kind of jokingly and mostly serious that I want to build a house that has nothing in it or like just a roof right next to the duck pond that we hunt, because you drive around and you see places that are right next to the river, or right next to a pond, and there's birds everywhere. And I feel like when they see a structure or a building right next to water, they just automatically assume they're safe there, or maybe they associate it with being fed. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but it could be other factors in there.
I've heard of people. I've actually had friends that have painted black shadows, like black human silhouettes, above their deer stand on the tree, so that like when deer come in, they see it and they just don't associate it with danger anymore.
Yeah, maybe we're onto something. Maybe we need to invent like a line of scarecrows that people can buy.
Yeah, just a bunch of mannequins hunting mannequins.
Yeah, like you know, some inflatable scarecrow / mannequin that you can, when you get up there to deer hunt, you can deflate it. And then when you got to leave, you just pump it up and leave it up there.
Man, we're going to get in the weeds so quickly. There's going to be like an influx of hunters buying blow up dolls and dressing them in camouflage and putting them in their tree stand.
Oh, that's funny.
But well, man, I don't want to take up your whole day. I know that we could probably both talk about hunting and continue this conversation for hours and hours. And so we might have to have a follow-up at some point.
Yeah, man, we could totally do that.
But before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to share where people can follow your journey. Cause I mean, you know, pursuing the Super Slam, pursuing the Royal Slam, like those are all huge things where I'm sure people would love to follow along and see your progress.
Yeah, man, for sure. I've got an Instagram and that's pretty much where I post everything. I don't go too crazy on it, but my Instagram is pretty original. It's pretty easy. It's just David_Falk, my last name, F-A-U-L-K. That's where I post all my different hunting pictures and stuff like that and some personal stuff too. I'm not too crazy about, or I don't go too wild on there about trying to get a big following, but everything's on there. Cause that is one thing I got coming up on Sunday. I'm actually flying down to Mexico to try to shoot a Gould's, which will be my Royal Slam. So if I'm successful, hopefully I am. But I've got the Grand Slam, finished it out finally, and now trying to get the Royal, and then maybe down the road I may try for the World Slam. I hadn't decided yet, but
jeez,
some exciting stuff coming up. I'm pumped.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Being able to travel to places like that, chase after turkeys, and then yeah, once you finish that, you're going to have to start doing like the big game stuff. And
I'm going to have to,
you know, get a buffalo and a bighorn sheep and moose, all that under your belt.
Oh yeah. One thing, and you can feel free to cut me off whenever, but one thing that I really want to do, and I don't know why it stands out as something that I just like got to do. I want to go to Alaska so bad to hunt whatever I can up there. I mean, like I would love to shoot a moose or a sitka blacktail or anything like that. But I really, really want to hunt caribou. I think shooting a caribou would be the most awesome thing. I don't know why, but it's just like, I've always been so infatuated with caribou. I think they're so cool.
They are, man. I feel like Alaska is the common thread in my conversations with people where I'm like, hey, what's your number one bucket list? Like where, what would you hunt and what weapon would you use? And it seems like it's almost always Alaska, and it's either moose or caribou in Alaska with a bow.
It's just like a wild place still. I think that's what's so intriguing about it.
Yeah. To think that you could be literally hundreds of miles from any other human being.
It's just amazing. And it's so freaking beautiful up there. Everything I see from it is just, it's just amazing. And then like so many different types of wildlife that are just like, you know, I don't know. You can see anything out there. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And people, I don't think a lot of people understand how cheap you can do a hunt like that. Like you can get into it for not that much money. The prices, if you go on Alaska, I think it's AFGS website, the tags up there are really, really reasonable, especially in comparison to some of the Western states. Like you can get a moose tag in Alaska for a whole lot less than you could draw a moose tag for in Colorado.
Right.
Like it's, I think it's less than half the cost of the actual tag. And then wow. You don't have all the applications and stuff. Obviously you have travel, but you're in Alaska. So even if you strike out, you still have the coolest vacation ever.
Right. I just talked to a guy. I was actually talking to a taxidermist a couple weeks ago about if I shoot a Dulles, getting him to mount it for me. And he had just gotten, I don't think he just got back. He had just completed a trip or something like that. Maybe it was last fall. I can't remember, where he went up there to like Kodiak Island. And he did some hunt up there where him and his buddies, they all shot sitka blacktails. Then they did a sea duck hunt, which would be right up my alley. They were shooting, you know, old squall and harlequin ducks, like all these tool ducks. Then they went and shot silver foxes, which I had never even heard of that before. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but
oh yeah,
beautiful little fox. And then they went fishing out there and were catching all types of crazy fish. And then, you know, they're showing me like the videos from like the little bush planes that they were flying on and the like the mountains and the snow. And I was like, that is a trip of a lifetime. I was like, that is amazing. I was like, I have to do that at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Kodiak Island is one of my favorite places. I've been there twice now. Both times I didn't want to come back, but you can get up there and you can blacktail deer hunt. You can fish for halibut or salmon or lingcod or a thousand different things. You can see whales, you can see grizzlies, you can hunt waterfowl. In fact, this last trip we did take a float plane and we flew over some lakes way back in the middle of Kodiak Island, like away from everybody. And there's cabins back there that you can rent for like less than $50 a night.
Oh my gosh.
They have no power, no running water. Like you have to just filter the lake water. And they might have like propane or kerosene or something like that for lighting. And then obviously they've got bear boxes outside because there's, I mean, like the heart of grizzly country. We actually saw grizzlies right outside one of these cabins.
That would be a little intimidating to me.
But oh yeah.
It's exciting at the same time.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best place I've ever been by far. Like there's nowhere that I can imagine that's going to compare to it unless I get way up in the middle of nowhere, like in the heart of Alaska. But even then, like to have the ocean right there and to have, you know, five different species of salmon that you can catch. Or
it's a sportsman's, you know, paradise from everything I've seen. It's like the Mecca of all Meccas. I can't wait to do it at some point. I just gotta finally just pull the trigger and just go.
Make it happen, man. You will not regret it. I promise you that.
May end up having to move there.
Dude, if you do, I'll come visit all the time. Well, David, man, I really do appreciate you hopping on. And it was a ton of fun talking. And this is the first time I've talked to a guest where I've actually been pretty much sold on turkey hunting. Normally, I'm telling people, like, you got to convince me, man, because I don't get the hype. And I'm finally to that point where I'm kind of buying into it. So,
oh, man, the more you go and the more experiences you have and the more encounters, I mean, it's, something's wrong with you if it doesn't get you sold over. I mean, switch over. I mean, it's special. And then just to go down a quick little rabbit hole, but something that's so special to me about turkeys too, you know, there's a lot of different things that you can read and listen to, like a lot of stuff from like Dr. Mike Chamberlain out of Georgia, if you've heard from him. When you really like look into turkeys about like, you know, how many nests are laid, how many eggs are laid, and then like how many hatch, and then how many make it to poults, how many make it to adults, and then how many are gobblers, like the stats and the odds are against them. So like it's so special to me when you finally see that 2+ year old bird, that adult gobbler. Like, that thing made it all that time, and then 2 years later, and then you happen to get it in close. I mean, I'm sure it's like that with all wildlife, but I don't know. To me, it's just really special with turkeys, because like, it is really, it is a divine moment almost to me that turkey's right there within range. I mean, it's just, it's really special. I made up with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to have to, do you know the numbers offhand, or I might just look it up. Do you know like what the ratio is?
I've heard them, but now that you put me on the spot, I could probably spit out some stats and they'd probably be all wrong, but I could get back to you on it. But if you start looking into it, I mean, it's pretty amazing, because there's only so many nests laid. And then, you know, I think they say like a successful nest is one egg hatching, which is amazing, because I think a normal clutch is like 12 eggs. And if one hatches, it's considered a success. And then I think the success rate is like less than 20% or something like that.
Jeez.
And then from that point, like making it to like 2 weeks old, like that first two weeks is like really pivotal, and like a lot of loss happens then. And then once they're big enough, then making it to, you know, a year old and to like 2 years old when you can finally shoot them. Like, I mean, it's really special to see a gobbler and to have that gobbler, to trick that gobbler and have it within range. You could look up the stats probably pretty easy, or I could send them to you later. It's just crazy. It may be like that with other, you know, like elk or something too, but you know, I don't think it's on the same level that turkeys.
Man, I need to look that up, because that makes me feel like the encounters I've had this over the past like 2 years have been so much more special. Like I've seen hens with over a dozen poults.
That's
like
special
out
right
in
there,
the yard. Like
you.
I've got some video. I don't have a lot. I've got trail camera videos and pictures though of hens coming in with a bunch of poults. But it makes sense. Like, I've been trying to keep the coyote population under control out at the property that I hunt. I need to do a better job with raccoons, possums, even a river otter. I had an encounter with a river otter just this past week while turkey hunting. That was amazing. Never had that before in my life.
And that's what's so crazy about it, because when you really start diving into it, like, everything in the woods is after turkeys. Yeah. I mean, snakes are a huge predator. I mean, obviously, like coons and possums and otters and birds and, you know, bobcat. I mean, everything's after them. And then even too, like one predator that a lot of people don't know is actually the great horned owl. So, you know, not the one that you hear hooting or everybody hoots for turkeys in the morning, but the great horned owl is actually a huge predator of like male turkeys.
Interesting.
It's pretty wild. I listened to a podcast about it where like birds are on the roost and these great horned owls will fly in and hit them at, you know, like 30 miles an hour or whatever, and literally just like knock them straight out the tree, like almost decapitate them. It's just amazing.
That's so crazy. Yeah. I mean, I see more hawks and owls when I turkey hunt than ever. And yes. Like they scare the crap out of me sometimes, because they'll just be like right behind me and I hear the wings and I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, they're
and
cool wires.
Here they are. They've like cruised in and they're just checking out my decoys.
I've had them
swoop down at my decoys before. I've never had one actually hit a decoy. But yeah, like you said, literally everything out there is out to kill turkeys or to take out the eggs.
That's crazy.
So yeah, that's gonna be something I'm gonna continue. Just trying to increase the population. I think that where I'm at, they are doing so well. I don't hear about numbers like this that I've been seeing from most people. And in fact, talking to some of the guys from NWTF the other day on the podcast, they were saying that the numbers are declining here in Missouri. And so the fact that I'm seeing more than I ever have, it all points to good things. So
yeah, you're in a special place for sure, because I'm sure they probably, I mean, they're going to know way more about it than I do, but from everything I've heard, like, yeah, pretty much turkey populations across the majority of the U.S., definitely the Southeast, are just steadily declining, which is kind of a little depressing for me, but hopefully we can get some stuff turned around. I know they're starting to pour a lot of money into it, and I know there's a couple other like you know, conservation organizations that are popping up that are really trying to fund some research and get some stuff going, where I hope we can, hopefully we can reverse that decline. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's a lot of organizations doing stuff right now. And I mean, anytime people can get behind one of these organizations that helps out wildlife, that improves and increases habitat, like, definitely do it. And it makes sense for people to start with the organizations that, you know, benefit the animals that they're interested in pursuing. But even for me, like, being part of NWTF, even though turkey hunting for basically my entire hunting career has been very low on the list, NWTF does so much good. And I'm glad I've been donating and a member of NWTF this whole time, because now I'm actually enjoying turkey hunting and I'm pretty hooked on it now. So
definitely one time we need to go together sometime. You're not too crazy far from me.
Just say when, man. I've got great spots here. I've got great spots here. Like I said, I plan on getting back up to Wisconsin and experiencing an actual turkey hunt up there, my first in Wisconsin. But yeah, I'd be all about it, man.
Yeah, we need to do it. We need to find a mutual time and make it happen.
Let's do it. Well, David, thank you so much. And good luck the rest of this season, and good luck in Mexico. Man, I'm excited.
Yeah, appreciate it. I'm excited.
Pictures of that.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for having me on. And if you end up making it up to Wisconsin or anywhere else, man, good luck.
I appreciate it, man.
All right.
And that is going to wrap it up for today's show. What an awesome show. How fun. Like, to be able to talk to David and hear all about his passions, his excitement, and I've got to fill you guys in, because at the end of the season, well, actually all throughout turkey season, we were communicating, shooting each other texts, sending pictures back and forth of the different birds that we got, and he successfully completed the Royal Slam, which, congrats to him. That is amazing. And then to top it off, it's like, oh man, I also made a quick trip up to Minnesota and got one. And I'm like, dude, he just is all over the place killing birds left and right. And what a cool life. I mean, what a cool deal to pursue. I haven't like made a conscious effort yet to pursue any like slam of any type, like killing all the big game species or all the ducks or types of turkey or different deer species. I don't know. I need to think about that. Like, the one thing I did say I wanted to do before I died was do the North American waterfowl slam. And that's a tall order. There are so many different species of ducks. But congrats to David on his birds this summer or this spring. And I'm excited to see what he does next year. It's just going to continue. And before you know it, he's going to have birds in all 49 states and then in Mexico and who knows where else. But before I let you guys go, I need to make you aware and remind you of a couple events. I know I've mentioned them before, but I want to keep them on your radar. One is the Send It Slam through Go Wild and Black Rifle Coffee Company. It's a music festival and an archery event that they're putting on, and it's going to be amazing. In fact, I'm hoping to be at both of these events, but for the Send It Slam, I am going to be doing a giveaway where you guys can win 2 VIP tickets to it, and I would love to see you guys there. It'll be awesome. I'm super pumped. It's going to be on July 9th in Louisville, Kentucky, and yeah, mark it on your calendar. It should be a good time. The other one is Half Rack and 2% for Conservation are putting on an event, and that one is actually going to be in August 20th. It's going to be up in Waterford, Wisconsin at Spanky's Sports Bar and Grill, and it is a community conservation day, and so there is a lot of stuff going into this one. I hope to have a booth set up there, do a live podcast recording. So if you guys are in the area for either of these, even if you're not and you want to travel, I'll be traveling a long ways for both of them. So I hope to see you guys there. I hope to meet you guys there. And cool or amazing organizations are going to benefit from each of these events. So mark it on your calendars. And until next time, always choose adventure and God bless.